And now, live from New York City via Los Angeles, California, it's time for The View from Over Here with the man who has a view for all seasons, your host, Stan Weisleder.
Should I take it away now?
You have to wait for my cue, for crying out loud.
Give me your cue, then I'll take it away.
Take it away, Stan.
Thank you, Malcolm. This is Stan Weisleder on The View from Over Here. Broadcast on CRNTalk.com over not only the entire country, but the entire planet. I'm here in the studio with Malcolm Barry Berman, and our story for today is, guess what? Just more bad news. And then we'll have some guests on, which we hope will alleviate things a matter.
Well, one of our guests is en route now. He's supposed to be in the studio, right?
He should be here any moment, but I told him he won't go on till about maybe a quarter after, 20 after.
And roughly. Don't keep it a secret. Who is it?
His name is Marcus Melanon.
And what does he do?
He wrote a book. He wrote a... and this maybe explains everything about my life. It said, the title of the book is Nice Guys Don't Get Laid.
See, I disagree. I'm writing a book, Poor Guys Don't Get Laid.
Anyway.
So he'll be on as soon as he comes in.
As soon as he walks in, we'll nail him and grill him and give him a mic and a set of earphones, okay, and he'll be off and running.
Well, let's hear your views from a beautiful downtown Calabasas.
Well, here's what we got. I wrote this up a couple of days ago because I was really bleeping bleep. Can't say the word because our good friend behind the glass there will bleep out everything I say. So let me say what I'm going to say, and he can't bleep it out because I've already bleeped it. So, what the bleep are those bleeping morons doing? Okay?
Which ones?
Which ones? The ones that run our bleeping country. Now, are they bleeping stupid or what? Didn't their mommies and daddies teach them the bleeping difference between a bleeping straight line and a bleeping exponential curve?
What the hell are you talking about?
Listen, just listen. What the bleep am I talking about? Bleep. I can't bleeping believe that you bleeps don't bleeping follow me. Do I sound bleeping angry? Well, what the bleep do you expect? And I'll make it real bleeping simple for you. E-B-O-L-A. Get it? It's been in Africa for who knows how many bleeping years, but nobody gave a bleep. And why the bleep should they? Most of Africa is a bleeping third or fourth world continent where many of its inhabitants interface by bleeping oxen-drawn carts, so there was no bleeping chance for the wide-scale dissemination of the bleeping virus. But once some bleeping morons let the bleeping virus out of the bleeping box and into the world that is connected by high-speed transport, there is no bleeping way to stop it. Think of it this way, Malcolm. Somebody offers you a job. Yes, they're going to offer you a job, make believe, okay? Where they pay you 2 cents a day for a day's work. What kind of work? Doesn't matter. But as part of the agreement, they agree to double your pay every day so that you get 4 cents for the second day, 8 cents for the third day, and so forth. Do you get it now? By the last day of the month, assuming there are 30 days in that month, your pay will be $10,737,418.24 per day.
Now tell me what this has to do with anything else.
Because that's how the bleeping Ebola virus spreads. And it could be a lot faster than that. It is a mathematical certainty. For all of the infected people that there are and those that are about to be infected and put into quarantine possibly, we don't have enough band-aids or bleeping isolation rooms on the entire planet, nor the required medical staff for the number of cases, 1.4 million by the end of this year, and that is now predicted by the CDC, Center for Disease Control. So what the bleep can we do about it? Develop a vaccine and inoculate the entire planet. And that is the only bleeping way.
Well, that seems too logical.
Well, that's why our government doesn't do it, because it's too logical.
Well, we would spend so much money on isolation, on checking people at the airport, but none of them, it doesn't seem like really anybody knows definitively how things spread. I mean, I listen to CNN and Fox News, and there's always someone who says, "Well, it's wrong. It could be picked up by other ways of picking things up. It doesn't necessarily have to be by fluids. It can be by." Would you please turn off your phone, unless it's something very important?
Well, this might be our guest.
Who let the dogs out?
Hello?
Is this any way to run a show? Is that your guest on the phone?
I don't know, if it is, he should be on his way. It's his number, so he should be here momentarily. Okay.
Well, anyway, getting back to Ebola. Actually, this is one, I think, of many things that are going to happen in the future, because we are discovering different parts of the jungle in Africa or any place in the world that at one time was inaccessible to people.
And another thing, too, people are living longer in general, so we have more opportunity to get things that in the past people didn't live long enough to get.
Well, I think that had more to do with something like cancer or some sort of
Alzheimer's, cancer.
Yeah, but
so
that's an age. But as far as infections, it seems, as I say, that we are now getting people coming in from all parts of the world that never had access to us, that maybe themselves might have been immune to certain diseases, but then bring it in. Like I was case in point, when Columbus came here, he killed half of the native Indians.
He infected them with smallpox diseases, or whatever, or syphilis,
because
they
were never exposed to it.
Well, what about when they brought back, initially, when they brought back rocks and pieces of stuff like that from the moon and Mars? Everything was decontaminated.
Shh. Now you're letting my next science fiction story out, the movie.
I'm sorry.
About the contamination that we're going to bring in from outer space.
I'm sorry, Malcolm. Okay.
So, please, anybody listening, it's already taken care of.
Don't sue me
on
that one.
Okay.
So that's why I'm a little, I can't even say the word. They're so finicky here.
You can
on
say
this
pissed
thing.
Off.
I can?
You can.
Well, that's why I'm so pissed. That's why I'm so bleeping pissed. Okay? Because this stuff should not be that way. There he is. I remember him from his picture. Marcus, have a seat.
Have a seat right over there. Take the earphones, put them on.
Ready to go, Marcus?
I am.
All right. Why don't you introduce yourself to our listeners?
Well, I'm Marcus Malatin. Lived here 25 years. And
here in the studio?
So what are you doing in Texas?
I'm a real estate agent.
Oh, okay. I thought you were a writer of funny books.
I was an engineer before that.
How's the real estate market in Texas?
Man of all trades.
Very good.
What part of Texas are you all from?
In Houston.
Houston? Are you having floods now?
No.
Are that Houston?
No. You know, it's over here, if it rained like it does there, it would be a flood.
Mm-hmm. Here it does a shower for 10 minutes and the streets are blocked.
All right. And they call off work.
Right. Yeah. No, they don't call off work, but you're stuck on the freeway and you can't get to work. Just a funny story. About 15, 20 years ago, I got into a car accident in Odessa, Texas.
Ooh.
And the Ranger stopped. And the Rangers were talking with their...
Was this a Texas Ranger?
Texas Ranger.
Okay.
But they were talking like they had cotton in their mouth.
Yeah.
And I could not understand them. And they couldn't understand me because I was speaking fast. I got back into my New York cadence. And it was funny. It was two different people speaking English, and we couldn't understand each other.
Well, same thing from people from England. I went on a trip once, and this is on the boat and ship, expensive tour and everything, and we were seated with this couple from someplace in England, and for 12 days didn't understand a word they said. All I did was nod. Not a word.
Like watching PBS.
Yeah, that's what one time Winston Churchill had said. It was two countries separated by a common language.
Yes, very true. Yeah. Oh, wait, you get different parts of this country, okay, separated by a common language.
But you know what does it? What separates doesn't separate any of them is the attraction women have for bad boys.
You know, I was waiting
for you to get back into
that.
Your book, right?
Yeah.
All right, why don't you tell us, I'm not going to say anything. I want you to tell us. All I did was give a brief intro before said that you wrote a book called Why Nice Guys Don't Get Laid. Okay? Mm-hmm. So you are the author. What made you come up with that book?
Well,
that title.
Definitely a personal experience.
Are you a nice guy and a virgin?
I've been a nice guy. I turned bad for a while, and I could say I'm a nice guy again.
Well, can you show your tattoos?
No, I didn't do that. I didn't go that far. But what I did when I was in high school, and everybody's seen this, the football players, the bad boys, the druggies, they had the girlfriends. And it didn't really make sense to you. And you would hear women complaining about this jerk, you know, that several women complaining about the same jerk, that he had treated them poorly, that he cheated on them, did all these other things, and yet
they don't leave them.
They don't leave them, but there's a string of them complaining about the same thing. Then I get out, and then Oprah's starting. Okay, her show's new, and she's talking about what a lot of the kind of the radical feminists of that time, men are bad. Men destroy relationships. It's men's fault. It's men's fault about everything. And Oprah would have women on her show talking about the jerk they were dating. And it finally reached a point where I'm realizing that they were giving the roadmap on how to be attractive. Because if those women dated these men, and other men out there are watching this and cannot get a date, and they're not like that, then maybe women are trying to teach men how to be the bad boy that they want. So I developed the book. I'm teaching guys how to get drinking problems and drug problems and how to lose their job, be undependable, lying, cheating, SOB. So if they have the proper mating credentials, that will make them interesting.
So guys, if you're out there and you want to get women, you haven't been able to do it before, stay tuned to our show because we're going to give you a blow-by-blow description on how to get laid. Oh, my God. I hope Marilyn isn't listening to the show.
She asked me before I left to come to the studio. She said, how can I tune in? I said, well, you're not computer savvy, so I'll have to play it for you later.
Right. Well, last week we talked about the sex doctor.
Oh, yes, yes.
And now we're talking, oh, my God, what is this show coming to?
What was the lesson he gave you?
She.
We're becoming X-rated, and we don't even realize it.
Now, I think we should do that. Paul? I think we're going to become an X-rated show, so but we're going to use the proper terms. We're not going to use any terms that are bleeped, I think.
Oh, we don't want to be bleeped.
Now, this is actually very the inside of my book, there's nothing really X-rated about it. The title is about marketing, and that's why I'm going
Marcus,
for that award.
Yeah. He's playing that music.
He's playing
it's
that
nice music, but it means there's a commercial coming on. But you're going to be with us. Don't go away.
Okay, so you're listening to The View from over here on crntalk.com. And guys out there, if you're interested in, best impression of getting laid or having sex within the next day or two, you think you can do it as fast as a day or two? No.
Or the ladies, same thing.
Or the ladies, even if you want sex. stay tuned, and we'll be right back after this break. You're on.
Okay, this is Stan Weisleder, and we're back here in the studio with Malcolm and Marcus. Marcus, why don't you tell our listeners all about yourself, what your website is, what books you've written.
And why you're in town.
Well, I'm in town for an award for marketing, primarily on the Nice Guys book, and the most outrageous marketing. And it starts with the title. The dirtiest part of the book is the title. The rest of it is really making fun of the desire women have, what they say they want, what they actually go for. You know, when they go shopping, what ends up in the basket? It's not what they say they're going to buy. It's what they grab off the shelf.
It's all the products with sugar and high cholesterol. And
that are bad for
you. Same thing, yeah, right.
Very bad for you, you know. And so I wrote the book to make fun of it, because writing a book that, you know, some – I'm not a psychologist, but writing a psychological book about the desire for the bad boy would be boring, wouldn't sell, wasn't the style of writing I do. So I took it from the other side. I said, well, if women want this, then it's all supply and demand. Let's provide women with what they want. So I'm going to teach guys how to become that obnoxious creep that they've been looking for.
Well, question, are you married?
I am.
And do you treat your wife like that?
I don't. Well, she might say I do. but we have four children.
Are you a nice guy?
And that's since the book.
Right.
Are you a nice guy?
Yeah, I'm a nice guy.
Oh, okay.
I'm a nice guy.
So you
I'm
don't
dependable.
Get laid. So you don't get laid.
No, he had to get married. He had to get married.
We know he did four times.
Yeah, at least. At least. That I know of.
No, but he had to get married to have sex. We're talking about sex at a marriage, I assume. Or, you know, picking up someone at a...
You know, and I picked up an old piece that I wrote, and it was about Tiger Woods. And I'm watching Tiger Woods on TV, and the score is rolling up. You know, in golf, you want a smaller score, but in his case, on that side of it, the score was rolling up.
Yep.
And it was the number of women that were coming out. And by the time I wrote this piece, he had been up. There was 11 women that came out. And so I'm looking at that, and I'm going, gosh, what an awful, awful guy. You know, look what he's doing. He's got a wife. He's got kids. All the stuff is coming out. And then it turned on me. I'm going, wait a second. These are 11 women that are telling everybody that they did this. They knew they were going with a guy that was married and had kids.
And you said there's a book in that.
There's another book.
Another book.
You know? Yeah, so it was just something that it's like, are men really the bad side of the relationship? You know, maybe women are. And the fact that 11 of them, a long time ago when we were raised, if a woman was caught cheating with a man who was married, she crawled under a rock. Now they get on TV and they write books.
Well, especially if the man happens to be, you know, a multi-billionaire.
Yeah. You know, I mean, so where's that pride gone to? You know, is that they've reached a point where it's something to let everybody know you did. They knowingly cheated. And some of them were actually talking about how bad of a man he was and what he was doing to his children while they're in public, talking about it, recording it for their children to see. And so that was, you know, so that's kind of turned a little bit worse in a way.
Yeah, don't the words go like the times, mm-hmm. they are a-changing?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't cheat unless the woman will let you and
that's
will
true.
Cling to you
that's
and
true.
Will do it.
And you can't lie, you know, if you're Tiger Woods, you can't say, well, I'm single and, you know, I don't have any women.
You can't. So it was obvious. Yeah, it was obvious.
Because, you know, a lot of you always hear the story about the guy lying that the woman didn't know he was married.
He was single. Maybe he was single in Utah, okay?
He was married in, what, California? Where was he? California? No, not in California. Florida, because there's no taxes there.
Well, he gave a new meaning to the term hole in one.
Yeah.
We won't go into details.
So those are the kind of things that would always hit me. I would look at it from the reverse side of it. And I like to write satire. So I wrote that book. I put it out to a number of publishers. They all turned it down. It was the first time I've seen where you would get the rejection letter. A lot of times they would stamp a signature on it. It would say signature, not the name of the person who's signing. But it would say signature.
Somebody has a phone.
Bad boy.
You're a bad boy, huh?
There it goes.
You didn't silence your phone.
No, but I didn't. At least I didn't answer it in the studio while it was on with you. You know, so I would take the other side of things. And I tried to get a publisher. The one woman actually wrote back to me under the stamp signature saying, this should never be published.
Well, we're going to ask you some more very pertinent questions after this break. Mm-hmm. And right, then we have a long stretch, right?
Yeah, we have about, I think, 20 minutes or so.
Okay.
You're The View from Over Here, heard on crntalk.com. And you can get all our back shows at www.viewfromoverhere.com. If you have any questions for our people, just email us and we will answer them next week. Stay tuned and we'll be right back. Stan.
Yo?
Yo.
What kind of word is that? Yo.
Yeah, no one says hello anymore on the telephone. I do it myself.
When Malcolm.
No, when I answer the phone, I go, yo. Don't ask me why. No more hello.
Yeah. Anyway, this is Stan Weisleder on The View from Over Here, broadcast on crntalk.com. I'm here in the studio with Malcolm Barry Berman and our special guest, Marcus Melaton. And for you people out there, I'm going to spell that for you. It's M-E-L-E-T-O-N. Marcus, tell them where your website is, some names of your books, so they'll know where to run to get them.
Well, the website is www.sharkbaitpress.com.
Sharkbait?
So shark, S-H-A-R-K-B-A-I-T. Press, P-R-E-S-S.com.
Okay, could you tell us the reasons for that?
I named it after my surfboard.
A surfboard?
Yeah,
you're
I had shark bait written all the way underneath my surfboard because I had an extraordinary fear of sharks, yet I wanted to learn how to surf.
And you overcame your fear?
I did.
Or do you surf? Or do you just have a board?
Well, not in Houston anymore. That's something I do miss. We don't have, there's no coastline. I could get up. I could surf a little bit, but it was amazing the capabilities of the guys here on surfing. And I was a swimmer from way back. I moved here in 1985.
You say you're from Louisiana?
I'm from Louisiana originally. There's no coast that you could ever surf on down there.
In fact, according to the New York Times, Louisiana is sinking. I think the article, the front page of the magazine section a week ago said like an acre or a mile of it or something like that is sinking every day or every week.
Well, just an addendum to what we were talking about with the Ebola. I don't think we have to really worry about that because I think the earth is going to destroy itself. I mean, the weather patterns are crazy.
The people are crazier than the weather patterns.
Yeah, but between the typhoons and the hurricanes that are happening in Asia now, and then I think a few weeks ago it was 90 in Los Angeles and it was snowing in Montana.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then, as you say, the rains and the hurricanes that they're hitting the Gulf Coast.
You mentioned a hurricane overseas. I was looking at the CNN news. And, you know, over here we have common names for hurricanes like Alice, Mary, or John, or Henry. The name of a hurricane out, yeah, I think in Japan it was like Fang Dong or something like that.
Yeah, I had that for dinner the other night at my Chinese restaurant. I'll have Fang Dong and a little dim sum.
You should name it like Thor.
Thor.
Or, you know, something that describes it. I remember, was it Rosanna Dana from Saturday Night Live?
Yeah.
It's always
Gilda Radner. Yeah.
If it's not one thing, it's
another.
Yeah, but when you grow up, every year something was reported that was extraordinary and that everyone could say, oh, that's because something's happening. I mean, there was a Dust Bowl in the 20s. There's, you know, it's like it's always something.
Yeah, well, I'm not sure whether it's extraordinary things or we're just hearing it more. Because now with communications, like there was...
It's a little bit of both.
This morning there was an earthquake in El Salvador, and my wife knew about it because her relatives live there.
Right.
And she got Facebooked. Mm-hmm. You know, it wasn't on the news, but
otherwise
she knew about it.
Otherwise you wouldn't have heard.
Right.
Mm-mm. No.
Anyway, getting back to having sex.
Yeah. Oh, so we were aware of the... Yeah. So the website is www.sharkbaitpress.com. And then all my books are on Amazon.com. So you can get them there.
What are your other books?
So the first one was Nice Guys Don't Get Laid. And then after that, I wrote one about lawyers. I called it Hunting for Lawyers, A Modest Proposal. And in there, I was proposing a hunting season to reduce the herd levels to a manageable size.
Oh, I thought you were talking about hunting for lawyers, looking like you needed one.
Yes, you're looking for them, but for a different reason.
And
in the book, I give all the laws you have to pass in order to be able to do that, because if you shoot a lawyer now, it's called murder.
I heard it's called justifiable homicide.
It could be, except that you'll be judged by a judge who is a
lawyer.
All right. And under laws that were created by...
I have to stop you lawyer, there for sorry. A sec. My kid sister. Okay, yeah, my kid sister, truly, she's a judge in Orange County.
Mm-hmm.
I won't mention her name. I don't want to get her into trouble. But she tells me the best lawyer jokes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, and she hears them all. And one of my favorites that I've heard is, what happens to a lawyer when he takes Viagra?
I don't know.
He gets taller.
Okay.
That's a good one.
Yeah. That makes sense.
And I don't think – did he bleep that out? Did you bleep that? No.
No.
Let it go.
Okay. Well, yeah, there's nothing wrong with it. Yeah. It's not what
and
you
lawyers
say.
Bought
it's a
the
word.
Book. I mean, it was my main buyer were lawyers because they joke about each other.
I've heard that they complain about the books written lawyer jokes. They complain about it. But they deserved it.
Oh,
they created it. They made it happen.
But I thought that was a book written by Dick Cheney.
Yeah.
Is he a lawyer?
I don't know, but he's hunting.
He
shoots different game.
Yeah.
And Malcolm. Marcus. You're Malcolm.
No,
you're
Marcus. Actually, just a little addendum. I almost was Marcus. I was named after my grandfather.
Oh.
Whose name was Marcus, except my mother said, well, Marcus, Mark, and there's so many Marks, and you know, I'm not going to name
I went
you.
By Mark through elementary school. And when I went in the service, I switched to Marcus, which is my real name, because... they'd say Mark and three people would turn their head.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you could have been Mark IV, you know, like
right.
The car.
Yeah.
But there was never anybody the name of Malcolm in my classes.
You got rejected on that book.
Yeah.
Now, did you get like a letter or just a stamp? What did you get?
It was just stamps. It was
a
in
stamp.
Fact, it would really, I saw them, they were S-I-G-N-E-D, signed. A stamp that said signed. It wasn't even someone's name.
I remember getting a rejection. It was a postcard with a stamp.
Right. And I had, what happened was that in New York, a lot of the editors were women, and they would get this book in. At that time, everything was about men are bad. I wrote this in the 80s. Mm-hmm. Men are bad, and anything that didn't say that, anything that said that women might make bad choices, that was just horrid. You couldn't say that because women are not bad. Men are. And so I would get these notes back, and I had one woman said, I love this book, but I can't even present it in the committee where we review these things because I'd get destroyed.
So you wrote this back in the 80s?
Yeah.
So what's the progression of the book?
I published it then, sold out, and then I published it again, revised it, put it out again, printed it twice, and sold out both of those. And then I kept getting orders for it after I sold out. So I went into Amazon, put the book up, edited it again, put it out. It's about twice as thick at this point.
So you're in the fourth printing?
Fourth printing and third edition.
So who owns the movie rights?
I've been approached by it. I've been approached by it. It's got, there's some great ideas and the stories in it because men would write me. Women would read the book and drop their boyfriends afterwards because I did a really good job of describing how these guys operated so that you could look at him and you could hear what he say and you now understand. He's not different. He's not unique. He's not special. He's just your average run-of-the-mill street jerk. And you can't fall for this anymore because I really laid out how they operate. There's one thing is that women mistake
Has your
arrogance.
Wife read this book?
She did. And, in fact, she was dating someone when I met her.
Is that why you're sleeping in the bedroom right
no,
now?
No. Well, I met her and she was dating somebody.
Uh-huh.
So I was the bad boy.
Well, I think back in the 60s, you know, the bad boys that were the Marlon Brando, of course.
Yeah.
Yeah, the motorcycle. What was the name of that movie? The motorcycle.
I know what you're talking about, the motorcycle, but then
I remember the movie well.
Streetcar Named Desire.
But I can't remember the name.
And then, of course, there's the Fonz.
Yeah, you know, it was
Henry
Winkler.
But he didn't ride a motorcycle, did he?
Yes, he did.
He did.
And he was a bad boy. He wore the leather jacket and the hair combed back.
Hey, you know, for guys out there, even Hitler had a woman kill herself over him.
Yep, that's
she
true.
She committed suicide with him. How many guys out there can get a woman to commit suicide for them?
Well, she didn't.
was he a bad boy?
We didn't know whether she committed suicide or he took her with her. Right?
He was a really bad boy. But the thing is that when you get down to it, some of the worst, absolute worst people on earth have women that are either married to them, attracted to them, or want to be with them next.
Well, what's weird is where these people, these murderers in jail.
They get pen pals.
They get pen pals.
Yeah. Richard Ramirez.
Hey, look.
Married in jail,
The guy who, I don't want to mention a name, but because he may be listening because he was here.
Right.
Let's not mention his name. He met his most recent wife as a pen pal while he was incarcerated.
Right. And then she's 35 years younger than him.
Mm-hmm. No, she's 36. She's more than
36. 35. No, younger than him.
Well, if we start talking about ages, we'll give it away.
Okay, we won't get. Well, if you listen to the show, listen to two shows ago. Hear the whole story.
Yeah. And, so that was the point I like to make on the radio, is that all these guys listening that have trouble getting dates don't understand why they're why women aren't interested in them. It's not because you don't have enough money, that you're not good enough looking. It's not any of those kind of things that you think matter, because the worst, absolute worst guys on earth can get dates. Women mistake arrogance for confidence. That's a big one, okay? Men can see arrogance and go, he's arrogant, he's a jerk. Okay, women, they look at arrogance and they think, oh, he's confident.
Well, they think of shyness as confidence also, just a little reversal of that, because I remember years ago when I was in my early 20s, and if I would go to a bar alone and I would sit in the corner and drink, this back east in New York, I remember one of the women approaching me and said, you think you're so much better than the rest of us. You just come here to look at us. And that wasn't the approach. I was shy.
Yeah, yeah. Well, I'll tell you, I would not advise using shy to attract women. Okay,
not anymore.
That is a rare event that women will approach you.
But what you say is true, because I remember when I was a kid, okay, and I wasn't half bad looking when I was a kid. Don't look at me now, but when I was a kid.
Which half? Never mind.
Whatever, any half.
Which side?
And it was a fact that always the worst, the creepiest, the most obnoxious people in the world got all the girls. Really, it's a fact.
No, it really is. And it's something that the reason that women would read the book and drop boyfriends afterwards is because it's really easy to lay out. I mean, it's very simple. And the thing is that women will try and give these jerks the benefit of the doubt. And they look at them, women look at men as a project, something they can work on to change the way they want them. And they want to see if they can fix it and make it better. If a guy's kind of dependable, he does what he says, got a good job, he's boring. You know, there's not much there. If he agrees with her, if he does the things she wants to do, then he's a wimp. He's not
powerful enough. Tell me, how long did it take for you to write this book?
Not very long. But the more I do it, the more I see, I keep getting it confirmed to me that this is absolutely
Malcolm, he wrote it overnight.
How about conversely? Are men attracted to bad women?
Oh, yeah. No, that does happen. And I've had men write me. You know, this woman I dated didn't treat me well, and she kept talking about this bad boy, and I took her in, her kids in from this bad boyfriend and all this other stuff, and then this guy would show up, and she'd bolt, take off with this awful, creepy guy that she always hated that wasn't going to be able to provide for those kids. But I've seen there are men that will go after a woman that will just work them over.
Now, do you lecture on this before groups?
Hmm? Oh, I actually spoke before the National Mensa Convention.
The Mensa Convention?
Yeah,
Mensa.
That was a big shocker, and I'm not a member.
Well, M-E-N-S-A?
Yeah.
Those are the brainy ones.
Right, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, the brainy
acts. And like they asked me to go there, and I'm thinking, how do you? That's intimidating. Yeah. You know, you go in there, but you know what it was?
But they probably didn't know anything about what you're talking about.
As smart as they are, they can't figure women out.
Because they're all nice guys.
Right. And the book was translated to Greek and printed in Greek. Why was that? Because women are Greek to them also.
Right. Well, you know what the Greeks said.
What did they say? What?
Women are for the Greek men. Women are for production. Men are for pleasure.
Well, I read that in the book once. Okay. Yeah, back in the days when I used to read a lot. Now I don't have the time, and it actually said to that effect. You know, women are for having kids, and men are for
pleasure.
Yeah.
Would I tell you wrong? Anyway, Stan, we have our actually a guest on the telephone right now.
Okay.
If you want to introduce him.
Marcus,
and
you're going to stay with us?
Sure.
Because okay. We only have a few more minutes, so stay with us all and right. We'll get you at the end.
Okay, is he ready on air?
Yeah, he's on air. He's here. Introduce him.
Arnold?
Quickly. Are you there?
Yes,
here. Arnold Borenstein. You know what? Can you hear me, Arnold?
I hear you fine.
Good. You know, I forgot that you were waiting, so I need some of your advice. All right. Arnold Borenstein is the memory man, and he is going to help us with our upcoming Alzheimer's or dementia or whatever else is getting the best of us. So, Arnold, you're on the air now with Malcolm Berman, our producer, Malcolm Barry Berman.
Right, you
forget. I forgot his middle name. And Marcus Melitan. Okay, and fire away. What can you tell us about improving or resurrecting our memory?
Well, I'll give you some tips of how to associate and exercise your mind. I've been teaching memory for over 63 years, and I've seen people from 10-year-olds to 93-year-olds improving their memory.
I'll tell you what, we have a very poor connection, and we can you know, barely hear you. So I'll tell you what, since it's so late, Stan will give you a call, and let's reschedule something and see if we can get you on a better line and make sure that the line is good. So I do apologize.
Okay, no problem.
Okay, well, thank you very much, and again, Stan will be in contact, and we'll get you back on the air.
And that's our producer speaking, and he's the boss.
Okay.
And we have a break coming up right now anyway.
You're listening to The View from over here on crntalk.com, and we can be heard on www.viewfromoverhere, and you can get all our back shows. And if you want to advertise, just contact me at malcolm@viewfromoverhere.com, and if you want to be on the show, contact Stan from viewfromoverhere.com, and we'll be right back and tell you everything you want to know about sex, but we're afraid to ask.
So I take it away?
You take it away. Don't take it too far.
That's the second time you said that to me today. Okay, this is Stan Weisleder back on The View from Over Here, broadcasting on CRNTalk.com over the entire planet and into the far reaches of the galaxy.
The entire known world and unknown world.
Okay, I'm here in the studio with Malcolm Barry Berman. I didn't forget because we had our memory expert on.
And we will have him come back when we can get a better line.
When we remember it.
When we remember it.
Yes. And we also have our special guest of the week.
What's his name again?
Marcus Melitan. Yeah. Okay, did I pronounce that right?
You did. Yeah, I've been on a couple of shows where they called me Malcolm the entire time, and I would try and stop it. And so when you first said Malcolm, I'm going, oh, here I go again.
No, that's
yeah,
Malcolm.
I know. That,
this
you're
is Malcolm.
Marcus.
You're Marcus.
It's the first time I've been on a show with a Malcolm.
But you don't look like my grandfather. I don't know. Well, maybe
anyway,
you do when he was younger.
We have about 4 minutes left. So
take
Marcus,
it away.
Yeah. Well, the
what
other
else you want to tell us?
Yeah, I wrote a book called PO'd Postal Worker. That one was about a postal worker with anger management problems, and he would go with a backpack fully stocked with weapons, and the deliveries always got through. His boss hated him, so he put him in neighborhoods where he hopes he would get killed, and he kept returning, and all the mail got delivered.
That's based on a true story, no doubt.
Pretty much. And the biggest buyers of that, like the Hunting for Lawyer books, was lawyers on that. And postal workers on this. They loved the book because he was totally dedicated, and the mail always went through.
No matter what.
Yeah, and the neighborhood would be a little better after he left than when he got there. You know, remember the that big shootout at the bank
In North Hollywood?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay, on one issue, he's walking up with a letter, and all you see is the address to that bank on the letter, and then he looks up, and these guys come out. But the letter still has to get there.
Mail must go through.
Mail must go through. So it ended differently. Mm. And so I would use things like that. Mm. And then I had The Adventures of Liberal Man, which was a...
the story of Barack Obama?
It was written during the Clinton administration. And it still sells. It's on Amazon. And basically I created a superhero called Liberal Man. And he wore emblems all over his outfit, you know, like a peace sign in the front. And inside the peace sign wedges, he would have Save the Whales. And so, and he had a bleeding heart on his left sleeve. Mm. And he always had the best intentions, but the results were bad.
The road to hell is paved with good intentions.
It was. And so that I had fun with him. And James Carville had a comment on the back.
Have you updated that book in today's context?
It'd be so simple. You know, because it's not, nothing really changes there as it does for The Attraction for Bad Boys.
But when did liberal become a dirty word?
You know, I've got a sister who's liberal, but she was born when liberalism was about, you know, really was about, you know, acceptance.
Well, I'm a liberal, and I'm proud
to
announce it.
A lot of liberals, and you know who I mean, I'm not going to mention any names, they're very liberal, but if you don't agree with them, they'll kill you.
Radical liberal. Anyway, I hear the...
Is that the opposite of radical Islamist?
Yeah.
I like the old liberals.
I hear the music, and we're about to go out. Well, thank you very much, Marcus.
Thank you.
And give us the website again.
It's sharkbaitpress.com, and email to me is sharkbaitp@AOL.com.
And thanks again, Stan.
I have nothing more to say.
You're going to be on phone next week, right?
Well,
from beautiful downtown New York.
I will be doing some interviews from across the country, and I'll be in touch.
From the other side of the, from the Easter coast.
From the other coast, yes.
Thanks for joining us today, and we'll be back next Tuesday on CRNTalk.com. It's The View from Over Here. Guys, have a great week, and we'll see you later. Bye.
The View from Over Here is a co-production of InfinityX and TBG International. For further information, contact Malcolm Berman at 818-687-2784. That's 818-687-2784.